Somebody who I'm very excited to talk to now. He has been pretty vocal about his views on Twitter, and I'm very happy to see that. He is a forward for the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. Curtis Gabriel joining us now on Sportsnet tonight. Curtis, how you doing?
Good, man. How about you? I heard you're the big Attack fan, so we got to mention right off the top, best surprise in the league, eh, bud? So we just got to get that out of the way now.
Wow.
Take
All
it
right.
away, McKee.
Well, Curtis, I mean, you know how to – I was going to butter you up, but you just buttered me up. So whatever you want to say now, buddy, it's free reign because you said they're the best fries in the O. So I was a season ticket holder for the Attack for like 20 years of my life. So I'm well aware of the Harry Lumley Bayshore fries. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I might have got some insight on your love for those two from Jeff Merrick, our good friend and comic. So that's awesome. And I hear Brent's like just absolutely enormous, and me being 6'4", I can't imagine how tall this guy is.
Brent is not. I mean, I'm the thing. I'm taller than Brent, aren't I? Am I taller than you, Brent? Or are we both the same? I'm 6'5". How tall are you?
I don't know. Somewhere in there. I've been told 6'5". I think more 6'4".
Wow.
We have better things to do than argue about our height.
Well, hold on. We got both tall guys. We got a great starting lineup for a basketball team, the three of us. You're 6'4", Curtis.
Nice.
I'm 6'5". Gunner's around the same. Maybe we could get a little run going here.
I think Jeff's just
messing with me because
he's a little
too bad
of all
question.
Of us, so...
love it.
There we go. Love it. We could talk about the Owen Sound and if I Owen Sound Attack, and if I know my co-host, he's gonna probably sneak in one more before we're done. But we wanted to bring you on because of everything you've been saying on your Twitter account, Curtis. I mean, it's been nice to see a guy who's been, you know, very vocal. We've seen it from a lot of guys in the league over the past kind of handful of weeks. Jonathan Toews, Tyler Seguin, they were two of the, you know, allies who kind of spoke up often. We had a bunch of guys signing their name included in it, Akeem Alou and Evander Kane today. Obviously, that was nice to see. So my question for you is, what makes you so comfortable speaking up? And has this been, you know, the way you have always felt? Or do you feel like you've kind of, you know, not evolved in your thinking, but maybe realized more as your life's gone along?
Yeah, well, yeah, all joking aside, everything in my life's happened pretty organically. Going back to hockey, I fell into playing high-level hockey because my mom thought other guys were trying out for the local junior A team, and she said, oh, if they are, you can too. And I fell into this path of playing in the NHL, and here I am 10 years later still trying to do that. So I fell into also being an ally to the LGBTQ2S+ community when I played for the Devils and wore pride tape on my stick in a game where I got the game winner and kind of was broadcast across Canada, and people really liked me kind of making them feel comfortable in the game if they're in that community. So I've kind of grown into this, and I've been keeping tabs on this whole Black Lives Matter thing for a long time. I've always been raised what I think is the right way by a great mother who I don't see color, but I see patterns. And I know people don't like saying that, but I do see the pattern of how it's been going for these people. And it's disappointing, really. So I've kind of felt, you know, I fell into this one now, seeing, you know, a woman in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, you know, peacefully protesting, but just being outraged that nothing's changed and the same things are happening over and over again. So that really got to me, made me break down. I hadn't cried a lot of time. And it just made me kind of walk a little bit in their shoes. And I know I'm a white person that's pro hockey player and lived a privileged life, but I'm a pretty passionate person. And I have a role on the ice where, you know, I do a lot of fighting and I'm very physical. I think that comes with having a lot of passion. So I just kind of just imagine my mother being racially slurred at the grocery store, my brother being killed in the protest, and kind of just tipped me over the edge. And I've always considered being an ally to the LGBTQ2S+ community as being an ally to everyone. So now it didn't matter what race under there. So now I just kind of extended it and say, I'll stand up for anyone who I believe is being oppressed.
So a question I would have for you is, I mean, you played in On Sound with a couple black teammates, a few guys with Matt Petgrave and Jamel Smith. I believe you guys played together. And I mean, was that ever a conversation that you guys had, like, in the dressing room in terms of, like, what they dealt with? Or was that ever a talking point, or was it just more sort of boys being boys in a dressing room? Or did you guys discuss that at all?
Yeah, honestly, I don't think we discussed it much. Our Owen Sound Attack have a long tradition of being, you know, a good person first and being a hockey player second, so they always brought in good people. And even Cameron Brace, going back to Theo Peckham, Wayne Simmons,
yeah, for
played
sure.
there. Paul Bissonnette, his mother's half black. So we have a long tradition of that. And we didn't really talk about that. You know, we celebrated the differences, you know. We all loved when they put on tunes in the room. We all celebrated their, like, them getting pumped for that. We play our tunes and they probably chirp us for our tunes. Like, it was all part of being a team and embracing everybody's roles and what they liked. And it didn't matter. It was about your character and what you brought to the team and what you did on the ice. So it's surprising looking back we didn't talk about it because we had such a good culture there, and I still think it goes on that it wasn't an issue. But that's not the point now. Like, even on teams where I've been on, like, I haven't seen firsthand racism. I can say that, but now we need, even though some of us aren't experiencing it, we need to be talking about it. So even though we didn't talk about it, it's something we probably should have.
Yeah, no, I think that's really well said, and I even know for myself, you know, I'll speak for myself here. I think I'm kind of on the same wavelength for you, that it was never a kind of consciousing, this is changing for me, but it's just you see more and more examples of things that you don't have to go through every single day, and you kind of can't help but have your eyes open. I don't want to make a point where Canada is absolved of this by any means, but it feels to me like the fact that everything is so hyper-partisan in the States, it can help kind of take something that should just be a moral versus immoral issue and turns it into a left, right, or a Democrat, Republican thing. Do you agree with that? Do you understand kind of the sentiment I'm saying, or do you think I'm kind of oversimplifying it?
No, it's absolutely exhausting. As someone who's never been into politics and now I'm going to have to find my way into them just because of the implications this has on it. Like Joe Burrow said it best, and Blake Wheeler said it, echoed it on our roundtable on TSN with Rick Westhead, that, you know, this isn't a political issue. This is a human rights issue. We left and right should be able to agree on humanity first, and let's worry about all the politics after that. Like, it's so exhausting, man. I just don't understand why that can't come after we fix some of these issues. And obviously, it's going to take a long time to fix. People have been trying to fix for a long time. But why can't we agree on these things, and why does everything have to go to a political thing? And I know we have to go to the – people need to go to the polls and beat up the politicians, like Killer Mike said, to the people that you believe in and what they stand for. But – we got to be able to sit down and have a hard conversation about humanity first. Like, people are so uncomfortable. People get so offended these days. And it's such a complex issue. But if you're not willing to have a hard conversation with someone across the table from you in the same room, then nothing's going to change. So these are the things we need to be talking about. And it's not fun. It's not comfortable. I'm in my house. I want to be enjoying the last week up in Onsen with my mom. But all we've been doing is literally talking about this issue nonstop, trying to educate ourselves. So people need to get uncomfortable, put aside their differences, and work at something that's actually going to make a tangible difference.
So, Curtis, I saw you went to the protest in London. How was that? And like, what were your experiences with that while you were there? I mean, what did you see that kind of impacted you? I mean, I've never gone to a sort of a rally like that. I'm just interested to know what your sort of what you saw as a white guy, how you were treated in terms of equality, and what did you see at that protest?
It was unbelievable. I'd never been to anything like that either. I've only done the Pride Parade in Toronto, which was obviously just a massive celebration. This was more of a emotional tone to it. I shed a lot of tears, to be honest with you, and most of the crowd was white. And, a lot of the black people had moved up to the front to really get in touch with the people who were speaking, but everybody was on the same page. The minimal amount of hate that there was immediately denounced by the speakers in the right way, that we're peacefully protesting, and those people were quickly, shut down, not violently, but let to know that that's not going to happen here. And then from there, just everyone just got really excited. Almost the second half was almost like the Pride Parade, where everybody was just celebrating the march and being vocal and saying the right things. And I thought it was just an overall amazing experience. And from what I understand, not many people like lingered around. There was not much trouble. Cops were freely walking around and conversing with people. It was overall just an amazing representation of what needs to happen. And I'm really proud that London came together and did that. And then everybody's signs were donated. They're going to be put in the museum in London, I believe, over Black Lives Matter issues. And I was just really blown away by it. But it was very powerful to hear. I don't know how these people spoke up on the stage and kept their emotions in check. Like, I'm standing there just listening, crying. I'm not even black. You know what I mean? Like, if I was up there, I'd be losing my mind. So to have the restraint that these people are having and doing it the right way was incredible.
I have to be honest, like seeing the videos from all around the country, and I grew up in Toronto. I can have definitely a bit of a big city bias at times. And did I expect to see it in Toronto? Did I expect to see it in Montreal or these other bigger cities? Yeah, but I was truly heartwarmed to see. I mean, you talk about the one in London. I've seen countless videos of smaller towns in the States, and even some here where it's there are 15 people out there protesting. And boy, like if you think that doesn't carry some weight, I can only imagine. One other thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, the idea of, and I don't know what else to call it, but I hate the idea of calling it an anthem protest. I guess it is making your opinions heard during the anthem. We've had one player do it, JT Brown in the NHL, raising his fist, and he said his teammates were cool with that. He spoke to them about it, and they had a good dialogue. How do you think, you know, this is a thing that's going to happen in the NFL whenever it comes back? How do you think, you know, kind of hockey culture or teams would deal with that if a teammate, you know, wanted to make a stand of some type during the anthem?
Well, first of all, it's absolutely an uneducated and very jaded view if you believe that, you know, that anybody's disrespecting the flag when they do that. And I think you can look to the Drew Brees, you know, kind of incident that's happened and how he's apologized twice now. And his wife said, you know, we're part of the problem. And I will say to myself, too, when Colin Kaepernick did that, I agreed with him. But did I speak up about it? No. So what's really changed now is that everybody's going to try to be strength in numbers and talk about these things and do these things. And I think you're going to see across all leagues some major things happening. There's a major movement against hate going on. And I think it's unbelievable. And I think people need to be on the right side of it. You don't want to look back and think you were not on the right side. And as far as hockey, Gary Bettman said all the right things lately. It takes time to change opinions. You know, at first when JT Brown did that, it wasn't maybe the response everybody wanted. But now everybody's coming around. We're understanding the right things to do. And I think you're going to see it all across hockey. I think it should happen. I mean, I don't know what platform I have, but if I'm playing wherever I'm playing, I'd join him in that. Like, there's no reason not to. We need to raise the awareness. More people, more than ever, are having these conversations in their own homes. And if you are someone out there who hasn't had this conversation, who doesn't know if they're should be involved, everybody needs to be involved. If you think my views and our views are talking about you're against them, educate why we're against them. Look into it. Get uncomfortable. This is what's happening right now and needs to continue to happen. So I think hockey's ready for it.
And I think what you just said there, Curtis, is the perfect word. It's uncomfortable. And I mean, I'm a white guy from Owen Sound, Ontario. Like, I don't have a ton of black friends. Like, I haven't really been exposed to people that, like, of, like, really of race in general. Like, I mean, now I live in Toronto. I work in Toronto. I get exposed all the time. But it's just having those conversations that make you feel uncomfortable. That's the perfect way to put it, because you can't just skirt through life pretending that this stuff doesn't exist. And you kind of have to have these conversations with people and just ask people how they're feeling. And it's just what you just said there is just beautifully said, buddy. Honestly.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Like, it's pretty easy parallel. Anybody who's listening or you guys just sit there. What is it taking to get to where you are in life? It's taking you to get outside your comfort zone. Nobody got to anywhere in life just sitting at home being comfortable in their pajamas, watching TV and eating cereal. Like, you got to get uncomfortable. Life begins outside your comfort zone. So why not apply what you've done to get to wherever you are in your career to this situation and how you can help? We all need to be uncomfortable. I've been uncomfortable the whole friggin' week. All I do is work out, eat, and learn about this. And I make mistakes on the way. Tons of people DM me, mess me, correct me. Great. I'm open and honest and ready to listen, and it's okay to make a mistake. And people who are criticizing, people like myself or people speaking up, we're not always going to say it right. And that's the point, because we're learning. So listen to the intent that we have. Listen to what we're trying to say. You know, when I say all lives matter and people say that's a, you know, racially loaded thing that white people have always said, no, all lives matter, but right now black lives matter, and we need people to know that. Like, we all matter, but black people need some help right now, and we need to lift up our fellow humans. Like, we're all part of humanity here.
So you also, I mean, you're a huge advocate for the LGBTQ community as well, which is an amazing fight for you as well. But do you see a lot of parallels, obviously, between the Black Lives Matter movement and what that other community goes through and sort of in a fight for equality?
100%. Like, it's in that community, it's all about just love is love. Like, who are you to say who someone can and cannot love? It just makes zero sense when you come down to it. Put yourself in those people's shoes. Of course, I can never put myself in a person in that community's shoes. I can never put myself in a black person's shoes, but I also possess the human trait of empathy. I like to think I have a strong sense of empathy, and it's not that hard to imagine. We were able to imagine all these other things to put people on the moon. Sit there and imagine what it'd be like to be in that community, to be judged by how you are, and you someday realize, oh my gosh, you're a woman that likes other women, and that's who you want to be with and have a partner in life. Why is that a problem? So, of course, why is it a problem that you have more melanin in your skin? Why is that a problem? It's the exact same thing. And that's why I always consider myself behind this movement. But I had to kind of make it clear now. And everybody's making clear that we do support black people. It's not just everything or the LGBT. It's specifically these black people that need help.
That's Curtis Gabriel, Lehigh Valley Phantoms forward, joining us now on Sportsnet tonight. Now, I think one thing I want to touch on that you just said, and I have one more question for you before I let you go, but the one thing you touched on there, and I think it's so important that I think a lot of people, honestly, whether they admit it aloud or not, they're terrified of making a mistake, and it's so much easier to say nothing and say, yeah, I agree with all this, but if I don't vocalize it, I can't make a mistake. And I think that, you know, like you said, everybody has made mistakes to get to some place of value, and as long as the mistake doesn't come from a malicious point of view, I think that's how we all learn. The one last thing I wanted to hit on before I move on is that, what is it outside of being vocal that people can do? Is it just as simple as that? Because I mean, you know, I'm not in an NHL room. I don't have the ability to talk to players, but is it just the ability for all of us to kind of be vocal about whether it's Black Lives Matter or this is Pride Month now? Is it just as simple as that, or do you think there's more that we as allies could do?
There's more, and that's what I've learned. At the start of this week, I wouldn't know what to say to you right now, but I've listened and I've learned and educated myself. And there's a podcast called The Big Things Podcast. It's very short episodes. It's unbelievable. This guy named Shaquille Chaudhry, he explained, prepare yourself. You guys prepared for this interview, right? You prepared these questions. You look into me a little bit. I prepared. I texted Jeff and got a little insight on you guys. Made it all more fun. Go look into what you need to do. You need to prepare yourself to see racism. Personally, I haven't seen it. Because honestly, I think part of it too is maybe guys don't say things around me. I fight people for a living, partially. Like, I'm not afraid to stand up for things. Maybe people don't say things around me, but if you're someone that, you know, maybe it's not as, I don't know, physically imposing or whatever, I'm very vocal, you know, you're going to, maybe you get in, you see on the subway, someone in an interracial relationship is getting, you know, somebody makes a racist comment. You need to be prepared to speak up. It doesn't mean, I'm not telling everybody to be a hero, but somebody says something like something racial and you need to just spit something out. You can't freeze up. You know, some people, you know, it's fight or flight kind of mechanism. You just need to spit something out. Like, no. And the person might look at you and, you know, what's that? And it's like, could you repeat that? And you question them, why are you saying that? And then they might make some generalization about some race or culture or whatever. And you're going to say, so are all black people like that? Are all interracial couples bad people? Are all Muslims like that? No, they're not. So you can quickly do something right there that's going to help you go a long way. And then if someone wants to get physically aggressive, you don't have to go in and be a hero. Like, some people are willing to take a hit. I'd be willing to take a hit, but that's part of who I am. You have to gauge your risk tolerance. You say something, if somebody's being, you know, assaulted verbally and they're getting physically aggressive, just put yourself in the vicinity of the people under the attack and verbally voice that this is not okay. I'm with you, and let the attacker know that you're with them. They have support. So I'm not telling people to be a hero, but just prepare yourself to be in uncomfortable situations and say something.
So I got to, okay, this is Sam. This is the big Own Sound Attack fan. And I got to sneak in an Own Sound Attack question for you here. But before that, I'll say, I pray for somebody to never be racist around you. Because I feel like they would not do a really good job in a fight with you, Curtis. Something tells me that it would not end well.
I haven't been in a street fight or anything like that. I've never had to, you know, protect myself, thank gosh. And that's where people also, it comes back to, you know, people are hating on police right now. I just spoke to a police officer. We need to remember these are people, too. They go into these hard situations and have to do these really hard things. They're people, too. It's not just a cop uniform. So, but everybody needs to be willing to stand up, whether you're ready to be physical or defend someone or not. Everybody can do a little bit, but I appreciate that.
So I will say, so here comes my, you were on the 2010-2011 Own Sound Attack when they won the championship. I saw that it was your rookie year, right? You didn't actually play in the playoffs. But what was the experience of being, were you in the building in Mississauga when they won? Because I was there with my whole family, and it was one of the craziest things that's ever happened to me in my life.
I was sitting in the stands. I hadn't played a game since, January, and Ryan O'Reilly dad and his mom were sitting up behind me or something, had all people around me, and I was just watching it happen. And Wayne got my jersey on to run on the ice when we won. It was an absolutely crazy experience, man. It was great to be a part of and learn from all those guys. It was one of the, I don't think I'll be on a team that close-knit again, and I felt like not even a part of it. Sometimes I feel weird saying I'm a champion, but I was just happy to be on that roster.
Well, I mean, you were a great Own Sound Attack player. You played for 4 years, 3 years in Own Sound, so it was your rookie year. That's understandable. So just one last one before I let you go. I just want to ask you about Jordan Binnington, who has really cut himself out quite a star. Won the cup in his rookie year, basically. Now he's shooting with Justin Bieber, potentially. Did you see all this coming with him, or what was the Jordan Binnington thing?
I've said this to people in all my personal life for a long time, and I could get people to back it up. I've always said he was going to be an NHL number one goalie. It was seemingly taking a long time, but I always, when we talked, it was always, hey, man, you're a goalie. It takes longer for goalies. It takes some time. But did I know it was going to be this crazy of a story? No. But we always knew, and even some of the billets I live with still talk about, he always had this just twinkle in his eye, and you can see it when he's in interviews. He has that fire in him, and it's something special about his mentality. So I'm not surprised, but just the way it happened, how it's like a storybook, that part's the surprising part. And now I think he's got his sights refocused on being the best goalie in the world, let alone just hanging around for a year or two.
All right, well, there you go. You indulge me on my two Owen Sound questions, and keep loving the best fries in the O, bud.
I absolutely will. Thank you very much.